The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, it certainly is the final hooter. It's our own look at the rugby league scene. We are also the loverugbyleague.com podcast. My name's Dave Parkinson, and I've been joined by the boss today. It's none other than Love Rugby League Supremo, James Gordon. James, great to have you in the studio again, matey.
Thanks for that introduction, Dave.
Was that good enough for you?
No, that was splendid. I don't often get called nice things, so it's always nice to get a positive intro.
You're always getting the called nice things when you step into this studio, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So how's the rugby league season been for yourself, then?
Interesting so far. Obviously, being a Widnes fan, it's quite Widnes fan with a Warrington-based business. It's been a difficult one on both fronts.
Yeah, we're struggling from a Radio General point of view as well.
I was going to say morale must be pretty low in here. I think we've seen some good. We've certainly seen better games, I think, this season than we did in the whole of last season already. I think there's probably been more good games this season than. I think last season was a bit of a disappointing one. Obviously, Casford have contributed to that by their brand of rugby, and also Salford have, you know, in the last few weeks, Salford have certainly, you know, by beating Casford, they've shown that, you know, building a stable team and a bit of stability works. And I think the other thing about Casford is they got so many raps, is it's sort of rubbing off on a few other teams. I know there was a few comments about how St. Helens have sort of, they've picked up a little bit in recent weeks, and that's been partly attributed down to maybe changing their style and not going up the middle a bit as much. So I think, you know, the game's got to improve quality-wise. So it's good that a team like Casford can prosper, because you don't want teams to go in the shell and be, you know, defensive teams and focus on completion rates and stuff. You want them to play rugby.
It's funny you saying this, James, to be honest, because not wanting to name drop, but speaking to the great Mr. French, Ray French, he was saying that the way Castleford are playing is not too dissimilar to how rugby was played in his era, you know, swift backing up and little inside passes and offloading game.
Well, I think, I mean, obviously the best plays to watch are the risky plays, aren't they? And I think there's too much now on, there's too many forwards coaching out that risky play. And obviously you can see why they can, you know, why they want to have a good completion rate. They don't want to offload and lose possession, because obviously there's a risk attributed to that. And obviously possession and territory is so important in the game. But at some point you've got to look at it and think, well, it's an it's the entertainment value. You know, you're entertaining fans. It's an sports entertainment business, and you know there's only so much five drives and a kick that people want to watch. And I think that's where you're seeing perhaps teams like Widnes struggling a little bit. Is it might be a consequence of teams who are maybe trying to punch above their weight too much. You know, they can't compete financially with a big team, so they've got to be a bit more scrappy, if you like, and play the percentages a little bit. It's interesting, though, that Warrington is struggling, because Warrington have actually been one of them teams that have tended to ignore the stats. I think they're generally up there as like having the worst completion rate most seasons under Tony Smith, because they like to throw it about and offload it and whatever. But obviously, for whatever reason, it's not working for them this season, whether it's changed the style. I've only seen a couple of their games, so I wouldn't like to say authoritatively that it is that. But I think you're right. I mean, everyone harks on about the glory days. The game was always better, wasn't it? You know, the game was always better when you were younger, no matter who you ask.
It's
like me, I'm only 28, but I always feel like Premier League football was better in the 90s, and it probably is. It probably wasn't. It's just you tend to have an era that you enjoy more, and you just assume that was better. But, you know, if you could watch teams like Casford week in, week out, you know, the sport would grow. And so, yeah, it's nice to watch them. It's not particularly nice watching them against your own team, but...
I have to admit, with Castleford, it's making that opening day victory they had against my team, Lee, actually look like Lee didn't do too bad on that day, really.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was surprised they started with Lee with an away game, because I thought perhaps Lee's first game back, it would have been at home. I know, was it? They played at home the week after, obviously.
They did, yeah, against Leeds, I think it was.
Against Leeds, and it was like, well, maybe that would have been a better opener for them, but whatever. So, yeah, I mean, in some ways, it might actually be a blessing for Lee to have him, because you don't have that you know, they might have got beat, and it probably played down the expectations a little bit, and probably makes you focus a bit more. Whereas if you can imagine if they'd, you know, if they played Leeds first game and beat Leeds, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, look at this. Whereas, you know, I guess, anyone's going to struggle to beat Casford at Casford the way that they were playing. And the thing is with Casford as well, they're not a superpower, they're not a Wigan, they're not a Leeds. There's no reason why a Widnes or a Lee or a Salford can't emulate what Casford have done, which is turn themselves in from a bottom half team to a team with some serious potential now to challenge for trophies, and with some superstar players as well.
I think it all comes down, though, to the mentality of your coach. I mean, Darryl Powell has been always an attack-minded player. He's carried that into his coaching. Okay, I think as well that the best thing that could happen to Darryl Powell is when he actually got discarded by Leeds early on in his coaching career, because he had to go away, reinvent himself, didn't he? And he's come back. He had that long stint with Featherstone, and he's just carried on that great attacking philosophy and got a team running through a brick wall for him as well.
Yeah, and there's no coincidence that both Casford and Featherstone have enjoyed success. And it's interesting what you say about Darryl Powell as the player. You've got to look at, we'll look at Dennis Betts, for instance. He was a hard-working forward. Wigan had superstars in his era that did all the flair stuff and all the running for him. All Dennis Betts' job was to run hard, tackle hard, and that's what he did. And to be fair, you can't knock the Widnes team for effort week in, week out. You can never really say about a Dennis Betts team that they've not put the effort in. But is it that forward mentality that's perhaps holding them back? You don't know. I mean, there's a few other, Lee Radford obviously is another ex-forward who's they're not a Casford. Hull aren't a Casford, but they're certainly not a five drivers and a kick type team. And we are seeing a new era of coaches where, Kieran Cunningham's another one. He was a hooker by trade, and his teams haven't particularly been full of flair, and they've not really played the way that Saints would have played in his day. But again, they're hardworking, and you can never say that they're not hardworking. And I think maybe that's just whether it's a sign of the times, whether it's the fact that these players are coming out of an era where all these players are probably the first wave of full-time players, aren't they, that have gone into coaching. And obviously the big thing about the full-time has been the growth in the sheer workload that they've had to put in, the amount of tackles, the amount of meters, the amount of minutes that forwards in particular have had to do over the last 20 years, and the actual size of them and the athleticism of the whole game has perhaps impacted on the mentality.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
You get the general gist of what we're talking about here on Radio General. So thanks for your comments regarding that, for the opening gambit. What I would like to do is look back on the results that we've had over the last couple of weeks. So if we start off with where we left things, we were looking forward really to Catalans Dragons hosting St Helens. We were looking forward to Widnes making a trip to Hull. We were looking forward to Leeds hosting Wakefield. We were wondering whether Warrington would get off the mat when they went over to Lee Centurions. We were thinking Castleford have got to continue this winning run at Salford, and Huddersfield Giants had no chance at Wigan. So what actually happened in that particular round of Super League? So in round 5, it finished Catalans Dragons 24, St Helens 28, Hull FC 32, Widnes Vikings 12, Leeds Rhinos 38, Wakefield Trinity 14, Lee Centurions 22, Warrington Wolves 8, Salford Red Devils 13, Castleford Tigers 12, and Wigan Warriors 16, Huddersfield Giants 16. And if I can just start there over at Wigan, that was an unexpected result, because I mean, I saw Huddersfield play the week before against Lee and they were dreadful. They put everything down the right-hand side in the first half, couldn't breach a defence. Lee actually doubled up the defence on that side because they knew they were going down there. And yet to back it up a week later, obviously with a slightly different side against Wigan, that's a great result for Huddersfield.
Yeah, I don't know what's more surprising, the fact that we've gone back 2 weeks, or you dropped in that mention about your proud analysis of the Huddersfield attack, because I know that you're proud that you pinpointed that. No, I mean, I think the thing is now is that although the overall quality of Super League has declined, ultimately anyone can beat anyone on the day. And so, Huddersfield, that's a good point for Huddersfield. I mean, I know everyone will point to Wigan's injuries, and rightfully so, but Wigan have still been turning over teams, anyway. So Huddersfield, I think they're dead certs for the bottom four, but that point could actually be invaluable at the end of the season, with a top eight spot potentially. You've got to get the points where you can, and that's probably a point that they never expected to have.
People were talking about the demise of Leeds Rhinos again after they got got smashed, there's no other way of describing it, over at Castleford. So for them to hit back and beat Wakefield convincingly with Watkins actually playing to full potential, because I've always felt with Watkins, he's kind of a half a season man. He does it for half a season, then you don't see him in some games.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'd be Watkins has been at Leeds for a while now. It'd be interesting to see what he'd do in another team. To see whether they'd bring... Because I know the way certain teams play, they give a bit more responsibility, especially to the right centre, to come over and play on the other side, potentially, and get involved. A bit like Chris Bridge used to do at Warrington. Obviously, I don't think he's planning on leaving Leeds anytime soon, but I think what's probably interesting about Leeds is the calmness that they maintain. So even when everything was going off around them, there was a media storm, the fans were going mad after this Castleford drubbing, but Leeds as an organisation stayed calm, they stayed professional. You know, they've stuck by Brian McDermott through tougher times last season when obviously they failed to finish in the top eight. I know we're talking about round five here, but they've gone 4 out of 6 now, I think. So, you know, they're there or thereabouts, and that's all you can ask for.
And what about Salford down in Castleford's colours? That was unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways that sometimes happens, doesn't it, when a team's been built up so much. They almost get a bit too... I'm not saying that Castleford were overconfident because it was a good display by Salford, but it almost typically happens, doesn't it, where a team gets built up and then they get this banana skin game that they fall over on. In some ways, it might be good for Castleford because it sort of brought them down off that pedestal that they were unbeatable. But like, that's no knock in Salford, really, because Ian Watson's got them really stable there now. After all the trials and tribulations with Kukash and the ownership, it's good now that the penny's dropped and they've realised that actually stability and having a core group, it's all about the squad. It's not just about having superstar players. It's about having a team that complements each other and works together well, and that's what Salford seem to have at the moment. They would have been in top eight last season if it wasn't for the salary cap deduction from the previous year. So
I know when they did the launch event, Ian Watson was quite pleased, because I actually said that to him within my first couple of questions. I said, oh, you know, you must be pretty confident with this set that you've got at Salford now, because bar for the points deduction, they would have finished in the top eight last season. And he beamed with pride because somebody hadn't mentioned the £1 million game.
I mean, the thing it'd be easy to think that, you know, you can... The whole reason of the salary cap is that someone can't just come in and chuck a load of money and build a superstar team. It's just never going to happen in a salary cap sport. And Salford ultimately ended up with decent players, but they didn't end up with a decent team. And a decent team is sometimes made up of players that aren't maybe as good as other players, but what they contribute to the team, the sum of that is far greater than the individuals. And
it's
the
sum of the parts, isn't
it?
Really?
I think that's Salford are a prime example of that. And I think if you look at some of the other teams that have done, I mean, Darryl Powell's always an advocate of that at Featherstone. You know, I think when he first took over, I think they'd finished sixth the year before. They added one player and then they won it every year for 3 years or whatever it was after that. And I think you look at some of the teams in Super League, Widnes are perhaps a bit of an example. I know they've fallen away a little bit this season, but Dennis Betts has generally stuck with a key core group of players. He's added a bit each year and they've grown with that. And I think that's quite important now with the way the game's played and the amount of trust you've got to have in the man next year, that building that stability in a core group of players is quite important.
Now, before we move on from looking at round five, Adrian Jackson, who would normally be in the studio with me presenting, he caught up with Mickey Higham after Lee Centurion's 22-8 victory against Warrington. And this is what the former Warrington hooker had to say.
Mickey Higham, is ever a player who's going to enjoy a victory against Warrington tonight? You were the man, but what a performance from Lee.
Yeah, it was a good performance. It was. All across the board, everybody worked hard for each other, certainly defensively. You know, we were committed, and our attitude and our will to defend our line and work for each other was, you know, second to none. That's what gets you some wins sometimes. You know, it was a tough, wet game. But, Warrington, you know, in a false position. You know, the public confidence is a little bit low, but they're a great side. They still had, you know, stars all over the park. And we did it tough tonight, and it was good to see.
Pleasing knowing to concede just a one try as well.
Yeah, it was, and, you know, they had to score it right out wide, and, you know, you stand that sometimes against a team like that. So, no, we'll take a lot of positives from that, but we know there's still a lot to build on.
And the forwards as well really dominated from the off.
We did, yeah. We knew we had to. You know, they've got a big mobile pack. They've got dummy half-runs that can burn you. So we had to ramp up and, you know, especially, I think like Gareth thought, Harrison Hanson, I thought they were immense tonight. You know, they rolled back the ears and, you know, it makes our jobs a little bit easier at the back of them. So, no, it was a real good performance. Certainly, our core laid the platform and, you know, it was a good win.
When the tries came as well, really well taken.
Yeah, they were, you know, certainly against Warrington, you've got to take your chances and, you know, for once this year, you know, we took our chances and, you know, that got us home the victory. So, no, we still know it was a bit more improvement, but, you know, we'll keep working hard. We're a close-knit bunch. We enjoy each other's company, we all work hard for each other. You know, on it's show tonight, we got the...
I didn't know it was in front of half-time. Do you think at that point you could get the job done?
We wanted to, but I certainly said that this game's it's far from over. You know, 12-2 at our time. You know, we probably haven't been the better team, but we knew they were still in it. You know, they were going to come out firing their offloads and playing quick, and they did so. But you know, we kind of got the arm wrestle and got it back, and you know, ended up scoring a few tries. So, no, it's very, very pleasing. But it's victory sweet.
Obviously, the victory sweet from your point of view, but for Lee as well to get that win along with the wins we've already got as well. Great start to the Super League era for you.
It is. You know, we're 3 wins in. You know, I think nobody fancied us any wins to be honest with you out of this first start of games. But you know, we've picked up 3 wins and you know it's come through hard work, working for each other. But like I've said, there's a long way to go yet. The challenge for us now is probably back it up week in week out, and we've got to go to nice Wakefield ground next.
Yeah, so there was Mickey High, and we interrupted him just at the end there, just as he was saying about going to Wakefield, because obviously that was done after the victory against Warrington Wolves. What did you make of that game?
I was impressed by Lee's forward pack. They obviously give a lot of go forward, which is obviously what you want from your pack, but I think that was what got them on the front foot. They really battered Warrington down the middle, Gareth Hock. Particularly,
see everybody pointed to Hock as being the outstanding forward, and without a doubt, you know, he scores 2 tries for you, takes it in sort of 10, 12 times, makes nearly 100 metres. But I thought Jamie Acton actually had the better game if you actually statted it up. I'm sorry, I'm doing my analysis again. I've got my analysis head on.
I think it might be that. I mean, I think the thing with Gareth Hock is he's targeted, so efforts from him are probably a bit harder because he usually has a bit more attention. That's not to take away anything from Jamie Acton, but if you look at Hock's tries, even the first one, he had like 4 men on him to get over the line. So
that's true.
I think, but ultimately that's why you pay players like Gareth Hock, because you want him to have that difference. And I think to be fair, I think that was certainly what impressed me the most about Lee was the mobility in the pack and the fact that they were able to play fast off the back of it. You know, obviously Mickey Higham, you know, he knows how the game works. He knows how to set the tempo. And Warrington just had no answer to it. And you never really thought that Warrington were ever going to score in the match. And, you know, without you'd like to think that Lee weren't looking at the percentages as such in terms of completion rate and stuff. And they didn't really have to. They just played their way and they were just too good.
Things moved on, and obviously we moved into round 6. And in round 6, as Mickey highlighted, that Lee travelled over to Wakefield, and it was a game of two halves. Really, I thought that in the first sort of 10-15 minutes, Wakefield looked in control. Then Lee wrestled it back, had it until half time, 24-12, the leading at half time. Then in the second half, it was a great comeback by Wakefield. They just managed to negate that pack that you've been talking about so highly there.
Yeah, I mean, Lee have never won an away game in Super League, have they? So I remember, I think I was at another game, was I at Widnes that week? And I've seen a few tweets at half-time, obviously people saying, oh, Lee, you know, looking good for the first Super League win away from home, and obviously it never happened. You know, Wakefield, you know, home games are so important for Wakefield, for Lee, for anyone, really. And so, you know, Wakefield have assembled a fair team this year as well. So for them to come back and win 28-24, I'm sure Lee will be a bit disappointed, but they'll probably learn from, you know, they'll learn from that mistake, and perhaps moving forward it'll do them good in maybe when they're seeing out games in the future.
I thought it was Jacob Miller who was the difference in that. I know Ben Jones-Bishop had that controversial try, which we've seen umpteen views of it elsewhere on social media, suggesting that it wasn't a try. But I have to admit, watching it, when they slowed it down, it did look like he got maybe something on that try line. I mean, and I'm a Leaf fan, you know.
Well,
so.
It's always difficult, isn't it? I mean, you know, the referees, the officials don't have the, or when it's not on TV anyway, they don't have that you know, they don't have the beauty that we've got of seeing it from various angles, or they can slow it down or watch it numerous times. They see it once from whatever angle they happen to be at, and they've got to come up with a split second decision. My little bugbear at the moment is the tries in the corner, you know, where the corner flag doesn't count anymore. I think it's so hard to judge them tries when it's not on TV. I think there was a Chris Wellham scored one for Salford at Widnes at the weekend. And it was just like, there's no way that you could accurately tell whether he'd got it down or not. I think Salford have one at Wakefield, actually. I think it was Greg Johnson earlier in the season
there was a
similar one.
Yeah.
And Wakefield weren't happy because it was given. And I think there's a few elements of the game where, yeah, it looks great on TV when a Tommy Makinson or whatever flies over in the corner, but it's great on TV because if there's any element of doubt, it can go to the video ref. But when these referees and touchies and in-goal officials are having to do it without the aid of the TV camera, you know, how are they meant to see that there's a guy there, he's got two or three players tackling him, he's got the ball in one hand, he's flying over a corner flag and he's got to put it down. You know, it's not allowed to touch the line, don't forget. He's got to get it down on a plain blade of grass. How on earth are you going to be able to see that in that split second?
I've got a mad suggestion to this. You know those LED lights that you see on Audi cars?
Right, yeah.
I reckon if you put all those right around the lines...
and just do it like
and
that.
Add it so
it's not a bad
that,
suggestion that day. They could get sponsorship for that, couldn't they? I mean, obviously a different sport entirely, but NFL, obviously, it's a bit different where they don't have to ground the ball, do they? They just have to wave it over. And they've got some real bizarre ones where if you just sort of hover the ball over the corner flag, it counts. And,
yeah.
And it's like, obviously, we're never going to get to that stage, but...
Hey, don't knock it. Well, we might end up getting to that stage, to be honest.
When I saw the video of the Ben Jones Bishop try, I just couldn't believe it had been given, but... It's one of them. It's easy for me to say that I haven't seen it on video, but you know the refs have got to make a split second decision. They only see it once. They only see it from whatever angle they're at, and that's it. And as the old cliche and the adage goes, it evens itself out over the season anyway.
This is true. This is what I keep saying. This is what I've said to umpteen people, and they've all said you're sitting on the fence, Dave. You should make a decision. You should be more biased. That's what they all say. The other results in Super League for last weekend were Castleford Tigers 43, Catalans Dragons 26, Huddersfield Giants 12, Leeds Rhinos 28, St Helens 31, Warrington Wolves 6. It doesn't get any better even if I say that quickly, does it? It was Widnes 10, Salford 46. That doesn't get any better either on second reading. And Wigan Warriors 20, Hull FC 22. Your pick of the other games though, what do you reckon?
Obviously Wigan's first defeat. So that was the last unbeaten record, I think. Am I right in saying that? Yeah. They're decimated by injuries. They actually threatened a comeback late on, didn't they? But Hull, good win for Hull. I think Hull have won four in a row now. And they're at Warrington this week, so there'll be a tough nut to crack. St Helens Warrington was an interesting one because if it hadn't been for St Helens' win at Catalan, there could have been all sorts of pressure on that game for both teams. As it was, St Helens had sort of got that little monkey off. I know they'd won earlier on in the season, but they'd got that monkey off the bat with the win in France, and you know they eased past Warrington really. Obviously, they were helped by Matty Smith being back, but then at the same time, Warrington had Stephen Ratchford back, and things don't seem to be showing any sign of picking up for Warrington at the moment.
Kieran Cunningham did look a heck of a lot more relieved in that game than the last time I saw him sitting at Lee Sports Village, because you could tell that the pressure was starting to crank up.
Yeah, and I think that's why it was so important for them to win in France, because could you imagine what the build-up would have been? Saints Warrington in the bottom three, only, you know, Saints would have only won one, Warrington hadn't won any. There'd have been all sorts of pressure on that game in terms of, you know, coaching futures on the line, and I think. Kieran Cunningham was probably slightly relieved that they've picked up two wins, because he's a very methodical coach. He believes in his principles, he believes in his processes, and you know, even when they lose, he says things that fans are thinking, you know, what is he talking about? But obviously he's got the faith in his systems, and now over the last 2 weeks he's been rewarded for that.
You already mentioned one of the guys that was key really to St Helens' victory in Matty Smith. Our man Steve Manning caught up with Matty to chat about his recovery from injury and the game last week.
Yeah, it's been a real quick turnaround really to be back in, you know, 8 to 9 week. When the surgeon said it'd be 12 to 16 is pretty good really. So I mean, all the credit's got to go to the surgeon himself, and obviously, you know, Millsy and Ad, who are the physios here, and who have got me back in that time. And you know, I've reacted well to everything. I've not had really any problems, just apart from my lungs and the fitness. But apart from that, everything's gone, you know, really, really well. And you know, to get that first game under my belt at the weekend was important, and to get the win was massive for the team. So it's you know, it's all good at the minute, and hopefully build on that now. These surgeons always put a little bit extra on, don't they? And just to, you know, I think just for you really, so there's no pressure on you actually coming back. But I felt really good. I mean, the leg itself, from the minute I woke up, was, you know, I've done my arm before, and that was really sore when I woke up. So, you know, the surgeon said that's a good sign of it going back together, you know, pretty well. So, you know, I've had no pain from it since then, really. There's obviously a bit of pain when you're doing your rehab, and, you know, you need to get the ligaments and all that kind of moving again. But you know, responded really well to everything that Millsy's given me and the staff here that have given me. So, you know, it was important that I got a couple of weeks beforehand to just get some contact work in and up to game speed. And then once I've done that, you know, the process was then to obviously put me in against Warrington. So, you know, hadn't been Catalans away, I probably would have played the week before. But, you know, with the flight and everything, it just wasn't, you know, common sense to put me on a flight and then play. So it was always going to be Warrington, and yeah, thankfully it went well, you know, last week. And like I said, the main thing, we got the 2 points, and I got through the game.
Were you nervous with it being like your third return to the side?
I was more nervous playing for the club, I think, more than my leg. You know, I think the expectation on us this year, and probably on me as well coming back in, there's been a little bit of, not, I wouldn't say negativity, but I'd say there's certain people, you know, wondering why I've signed back for the club, and fans and all that kind of stuff. But that's, you know, you get that with anything. You've just got to prove them people wrong, and that's what I want to do now. But so there was pressure in terms of performing, not so much with the leg. You know, I didn't really even think about the leg, to be honest. I knew it was right. I knew we'd done everything we could in the 8 to 9 week I was out, and it was just a case of getting out on the field and performing.
And the game itself was a very good team win, and so to speak, after a bit of adversity at the beginning of the season, it's now 2 from 2, and now it's time to kick on, so to speak.
Yeah, we need to kick on. That's, you know, the most important thing for us now, and just I know we always say this, but week by week, I mean, we've got, I think we step up a level again against Salford away. I think Warrington are a fantastic side, don't get me wrong, but we're at home there, and they wasn't going too well. But I think Salford are going really well, and playing them at Salford is going to be an hard game for us. So it's important that we don't really pat ourselves on the back too much this week, and just get on with it and concentrate on that game, because it's going to be a tough game, like I've mentioned. And you know, it's important for us now to just keep winning, keep performing, everyone doing their job, and just knock a few wins off now, because we have been disappointing this early part of the season.
It makes it sound so easy, doesn't it? Just link a few things together, get a few wins going.
Yeah, if only it was.
Nice to hear from him, though. I mean, you know, he has had to battle back, and, you know, that was a bad injury that he got right in the pre-season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's done well, really. He's suffered to recover from a broken leg, and he's only been out 8 weeks, has he, something like that. So, you know, it's. I know he said his surgeon's done a good job, and he said he felt, I think Matty compared it to an arm injury he had early in his career. He broke his arm, he had surgery, and he woke up in pain, whereas as soon as he'd had surgery on the leg, he said he felt fine. So, obviously a big boost for Saints. That's why they signed him, ultimately. You know, he was going to be the key player, and so it proved.
I'm going to compare him to, like, the $6 million man. We can fix him. We can repair him.
Well, I remember when like years ago, when someone broke their leg playing football, it was like 8 or 9 months out or something,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
was
it,
just
it? Yeah.
Like, yeah, so it, obviously a boost for Saints, and I'm sure they'll kick on now.
Now, we were both at one particular game at the weekend, which was Widnes Vikings against Salford Red Devils. It ended up being a resounding victory, to be honest, for the Salford Red Devils. I've got to be honest, though, and I know that Dennis Betts was really critical of his team afterwards, and you know, said that he didn't feel it. They gave the answers, and that the answers lie in that dressing room for improving. But I thought Salford were particularly good.
Yeah, I mean, I think Salford are in it. I think the thing is with Salford is they're actually a good team, and I know it sounds daft me saying that, but I don't think they played to their full potential. I just thought they put in a good performance. I don't think they weren't white hot like Casford were white hot at Leeds a few weeks ago. But yeah, I think you're right in what you say. It's perhaps slightly unfair on Salford to just say it was because of Widnes's poor performance. I think the game it wasn't too dissimilar to when Widnes played Cass, where it was a bit of an arm wrestle early doors, and then as soon as Widnes were broken, they just sort of capitulated a little bit. Certainly Widnes's defence out wide was pretty poor, and Salford waltzed in for a couple of tries in that first half. It was 30-0 at half time, I think. So, but at the end of the day, Salford can only play what's in front of them, and for you to be able to put 30 points on any team away from home in two plays is a fair effort.
I thought both centres were tremendous, to be honest. I mean, I've looked at the stats again. And both of them ran for over 150 metres, which is phenomenal. When you're looking, and they, as a team, they met 1,500 metres overall, and your centres are contributing 300 of them.
Yeah, I think I know. Obviously, Widnes have got problems. I know Tom Armstrong played with food poison, I believe. But certainly Widnes's wide defence is poor, and obviously that enables the centres to get out there. The way is now is the backs come in, don't they, and take some decent carries. On the defensive set, on the kit recovery and stuff like that. So I think generally Salford's team, they all contributed, and what an option for them to have, that they've just got Todd Carney twiddling his thumbs on the bench ready to come on to see off a game when you're winning 30-odd nil.
Another one of the stars for Salford was Gareth O'Brien, and our man Adrian Jackson had a chat with him after the game. This is what he had to say.
Gareth O'Brien, after the efforts of Casford last week, you must have been pleased to have backed up against Widnes tonight.
Yeah, well, that was the aim. We put in a good performance last week against Cass. They're an informed team, so I knew it would be tough coming here, especially on at Widnes. So we just wanted to back it up, which we've not done this year. We've gone win-loss. So pleased to get the 2 points, and we look forward to St Helens.
Took 10 minutes to settle down, but once you got into gear, Widnes couldn't deal with that attack.
Yeah, well, we spoke about building a game. A big emphasis on the first 5 minutes, and that gets us right into the grind of the game. And once we get in them good ball positions on a dry pitch, we're pretty difficult to handle. So as I say, credit to the boys tonight, putting a good performance, and we move on.
Certainly wearing free and cruise control in that first half.
Yeah, we got off to a real good start, and ending to the break at 30 points up really set us up for a good overall game. But credit Widnes, they came back out in the second half, and it was with an early try, and really set the alarm bells going again. But thankfully we managed to switch momentum and come up with a good win.
Good. So when you're so far up at half time, is it difficult to fully concentrate for the second half?
No, the talk was we can't switch off here, because we know Widnes were going to come straight back at us, so, and that's what they did. So the talk was good. We just needed to go out there and execute it, and came away with the 2 points, which is the main thing.
How do you feel you went during that match?
Not bad. A few loose passes that I need to rein in, but overall solid performance. I thought Chris Welling was outstanding, and Todd Carney came off the bench as well, make his debut, was real good when he came on as well. So overall, boys were really dug in and made up.
Obviously your focus was on Salford. What did you make of Widnes tonight?
They're doing it tough, they've got injuries. It's always hard when they picked up a few as well tonight, so I think they were down to two subs. So they're doing it tough, but I'm sure they'll come good. They've got some real class players to come back from injury, and I'm sure they'll be fine.
Mentioned the game against St Helens, you'll be going there full of confidence now, won't you?
I think they've had a good win against Warrington tonight, so look forward to getting back on Sky Sports and Thursday night. Yep, no worries, no problem.
Your Feel Better Station. Feel Better
Station. Radio General.
Get online with Radio General.
www.radiogeneral.co.uk.
Radio General Online has information about the station's presenters, along with our current programme schedule and details of how to make requests for patients in Warrington Hospital. There's also plenty of background information about Radio General, including our long history of broadcasting in Warrington.
Radio General Online.
www.radiogeneral.co.uk. Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Welcome back to the Final Hooter here on Radio General. We're also the LoveRugbyLeague.com podcast. I'm Dave Parkinson. I'm delighted to be joined by our man, the main man of loverugbyleague.com. It's James Gordon. James, we've been talking about Super League. You heard Gaz O'Brien there. Is he just a man that's completely changed from the guy that was maybe a bit part at Warrington and ended up going, spending time on loan at many other places?
I think he's matured, as players do, especially halfbacks, don't they? They're a bit, they're either undercooked or a bit too cocky when they're young, aren't they? And I don't think Gareth O'Brien wasn't a cocky halfback, but he was perhaps maybe a bit lightweight, a bit undercooked, and he's improved with experience. But that being said, I think he was treated poorly at Warrington. I think he probably deserved a chance. And especially when you look at where Warrington are at in the halves at the moment, you know, they desperately went out and bought Kevin Brown after Sandow left. Gidley's probably passed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure there's a few Warrington fans who are probably looking at O'Brien and thinking, and I know he's playing at fullback for Salford, which might in turn be his long-term position. Warrington have obviously got Ratchford there. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously he's got that million-pound moment that he had last year, and you know, he kicked the winning goal against Castleford, and he's becoming more and more a key player for Salford. He's probably one of the first names on Ian Watson's team sheet now.
We'll also hear from Ian Watson, actually, because he was speaking to the Assemble Press. Do you like what I did there? And this is what he had to say in the post-match press conference.
The pleasing thing was what we spoke about as a team all through the week, which was backing up the win against Castleford. We felt we'd kind of come up short and let ourselves down a little bit as a group in not backing up against Wakefield, because we'd kind of lost one. We wanted to kind of put that to bed as early as we could in the season, really, and prove that we're a team that needs to be taken seriously all the time. We had a big focus on our start today, and the way we played the first half was pretty good, to be fair, and we looked silky at times as well with ball in hand. The defensive side of things was good in the first half. We had to make a lot of changes second half. It disrupted us a little bit. Like Todd, when he came on after 5 minutes, obviously he was chasing the ball a little bit, but later on you saw his skill when he started to fall into our shapes. So that's just a little bit of timing working together. But on the whole, really pleasing, a real professional performance, I thought.
Robert Louis was outstanding, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was good. I don't know where to play now. He just played everywhere out there. he played wing at one point. He was jumping up, taking the high kick, and then he's scored at the centre. He's come on at loose forward as well. So he's played everywhere there. But he's been great for us all year this year, Robert. So which is good, because we've got that competition, which is what I wanted this year with Dobbo, Rob Louis and Todd Carney there. We've got that competition, and young Josh Wood backs that up as well for us. Junior's come off with a little bit of a hamstring. Benny Murdoch we lost pretty early. I kept Benny off because I didn't want to risk him second half. He was saying he could have gone back out there if we'd give him a jab, but I just didn't think it was worth doing, to be honest with you. I'd rather keep him back for the Saints game.
It seemed like they were all queuing up to celebrate the new contract with the
Triad, didn't they? Oh, yeah. The boys are in a good place. It's everyone knows it down at Salford that it's about the team. It's not about individuals. It's about the team. So regardless of the contracts, they'll all come if we're performing and playing like that. They'll fall in line and they'll come.
So a very happy Ian Watson there, and I'm really pleased for him, to be honest, because he's one of Rugby League's good guys as well, is Ian?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking about Darryl Powell before, and Ian Watson was a halfback, obviously, in his playing days, and perhaps there's a correlation between decent teams playing good rugby, coached by halfbacks, as opposed to being coached by forwards. Who knows?
Let us have a look at what we've got forthcoming this weekend in Super League. So it all kicks off Thursday the 30th of March with Salford Red Devils at home to St Helens. On Friday, it's Castleford Tigers against the Huddersfield Giants, and Leeds Rhinos taking on Wigan Warriors. That's the TV game. On Saturday, it's Catalans against Wakefield, 6 o'clock kickoff there. And Lee Centurions host Widnes Vikings, that's a 4 o'clock kickoff. And strangely enough, Warrington are also playing on the Saturday. We seem to have gone back to Saturday kickoffs in this particular round for some reason. Warrington at home to Hull. Again, some enticing games there, really.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Warrington. You know, we're still looking for that first to get off the mark. And obviously, Hull at home. It's a tricky one. Hull, I think they've won, like I said earlier, they've won four on a spin. It's a repeat of the Challenge Cup final last year, of course. So yeah, it'd be a tough one for Warrington. I think, obviously, with the Easter period coming up, I think that's why everyone's trying to get the games in the weekend as early as possible. It's not great for fans because, you know, ultimately you're playing at all sorts of times. But that's just the way it is at the moment.
Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Let us move into the Championship, where it was round 7 last weekend. These are the results. Batley Bulldogs 50, Oldham 10. Bradford Bulls 56, Dewsbury Rams 18. Featherstone Rovers 26, Toulouse Olympique 34. Hull Kingston Rovers 28, Halifax 14. London Broncos 28, Rochdale Hornets 8. And Swinton Lions 24, Sheffield Eagles 28. Any standout results for you there?
A few, Dave, obviously. Bradford are just two wins now away from wiping out the 12-point deduction that they got. And I think they've got... I think they've got Oldham and Batley, I think, the next two games, or Oldham and Sheffield,
yeah,
something like that.
They're away at Oldham this coming weekend.
Yeah, they've got Sheffield, I think, next Sunday. So, at home, so they'll see them two as winnable games. Obviously, it was the last Dewsbury parted company with Glenn Morrison after that match.
Always sad when a coach ends up leaving, but I don't know. I mean, I've spoken to Glenn Morrison a couple of times this season, and again, he's been feeling the pressure. You know, he's not been able to turn it round. I think he's had a couple of run-ins on social media as well, which hasn't helped.
He's been there 5 years, and obviously Dewsbury put out... I mean, it's interesting because obviously when coaches leave, there's usually a statement, and obviously Dewsbury were really positive about Glenn Morrison basically saying he was doing a full-time job for a part-time wage. And sometimes it's just a case of it's time to move on, or maybe it's not the right situation. It strikes me that Glenn Morrison wants to be a full-time, you know, a full-time coach at a full-time club. He doesn't want to be a part-time coach at a part-time team. Unfortunately, in the world of rugby league, there's not that many opportunities to be a full-time coach. So it'd be interesting to see where he winds up. Elsewhere, Toulouse keep winning games. I think they've now won more games this season than they managed in their first season in the Championship last time. Which is obviously progress, and you know they're going to be, if they get in the top four, no one's going to fancy going to Toulouse in the summer to get a win. You know, if a Widnes or Huddersfield have got to go to Toulouse in August to get a result, it's going to be tough.
They're certainly scoring some points as well. I mean, you know, to win at Featherstone 34-26, they've got Mark Corella, who's one of the Championship's top players. He had a really, really good game in the Challenge Cup last season against Lee. You know, brilliant fullback and link-in player. I think he can also do a bit at halfback as well. Scored 3 tries at the weekend, kicked 5 goals. So he's definitely a danger man moving forward, isn't he, for him?
Yeah, and obviously Featherstone aren't, you know, Featherstone are no mugs. They're a good team in their own right. So for Toulouse to rock up there and come away with the points is a good result.
Spirited from Halifax as well, but ultimately Hull Kingston Rovers too strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've strengthened this week again, haven't they? Hull Car, they've signed Josh Johnson, ex-England Academy prop from Huddersfield. It's like, I think Hull Car, the big thing for them is they've got to be careful, or the focus for them, they're obviously going to make the middle eights. They've got to not do what Lee did the first year and get too carried away. They've got to head into that middle eight and still have some bits in the tank, not get too ahead of themselves and treat it seriously. I'm not saying that Lee didn't treat it seriously, but I think Lee negotiated 3 tough fixtures to start. They give it their all, they lost them, and then they sort of fell away. Bottom line is for KR, if they get in the middle eight, if they beat the other 3 Championship teams, they're almost guaranteed to be in the £1 million game, even if they manage just that. So that's what they've got to focus on. You know, the thing is with OKR is the fans have backed them to the hilt. That wouldn't necessarily happen to some of the other teams in Super League at the moment. They're getting big crowds, so it's actually turning into it could actually turn into a real springboard season for OKR moving forward.
Which is what happened at Huddersfield when Huddersfield got relegated, to be honest, because they never looked back really, did they, until, you know, sort of the recent past, shall we say, where they've got dragged back into it again.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it helps because it clears you out of, not the deadwood, but you become so reliant on the Sky money when you're in Super League. And I know obviously the funding situation's a bit different now in the Championship than it has been in previous years, but you get so reliant on the Sky funding, you feel you have to spend it, you end up with maybe players you don't need on contracts that they shouldn't be on, you get off-field staff that maybe you don't need who aren't actually pulling the weight or whatever, and it can go one or two ways. We've seen what it went with Bradford, where the fans, it's a bit of a, they're a sort of an unusual case, a one-off Bradford because of their situation. But, you know, you look, Casford were the same when Casford got relegated. The fans stuck by them, I think, the first time. They got relegated twice, didn't they, in a few years. But they stayed by them. They were averaging 6,000, I think, back in 2006, was it, 2007?
Which seems to be what's happening at Hull Kingston.
Yeah, and that's what
it?
I mean. And I think you can go one or two ways. You either suck it up, the club does well, they engage the fans and they keep back, which is what's happened at Hull Care, what happens at Casford, or it goes the way of, say, a Bradford or a Halifax, where the fans drop off. And I feel you know, obviously, you know, I'm at Widnes every week. I feel like at the moment, the way Widnes are going, I think if they were to go down, I think they probably wouldn't be able to match what Hull KR have done. So we'll see.
It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one. It's always a tough competition to escape from if you get in it, as I can testify.
I mean, ultimately, the bottom line is that you can win the championship, you can win all 23 games 100-0, but if you can't beat a Super League team in the Middle Eights, you're not going to get out of it. Whether that be in the regular, in the first seven, or whether it be in the £1 million game, you've got to beat one Super League team, and a good championship team isn't necessarily capable of beating a Super League team. Obviously, I think there's the fear factor now, because I think everyone expects Hull KR to come up, and I expect Hull KR to come up, and no one's going to fancy playing, no Super League team's going to fancy going to play Hull KR at Hull KR in the Middle Eights.
Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
We're galloping towards the end of the show now, James.
Time flies when you're having fun, Dave.
Isn't it amazing how you just get swept along, you know? I always get to this point and think, crikey, how have we ended up with so little time left? We've still got to talk a little bit about League One. They entered round three of their competition last weekend. These are the results. Barrow Raiders 82, Hemel Stags 0. Keithley Cougars 21, Toronto Wolfpack 48, London Scholars 42, Coventry Burrs 16, the South Wales Ironmen 20, Newcastle Thunder 26, Workington Town 54, Gloucestershire All Golds 22, and York City Knights 22, North Wales Crusaders 26. I'll come to the Keithley and Toronto game in a minute, because we have got an interview to play with Paul Rowley, their coach. But I just want a quick word there about North Wales Crusaders. I mean, they go to York, who were there or thereabouts last season. That's a great result for them, isn't it?
Yeah, a good win for North Wales away from home at York. It's a bit of a funny division that at the moment, isn't it? Because there's some teams that are just sort of existing and they're a bit deadbeat. There's some aspiring teams in there that are trying to grow, like Gloucestershire, and then obviously you've got the heavyweights that are trying to, you know, that are trying to get out of there.
I mean, from the early looks of it, Barrow Raiders look like they're going to be one of those heavyweights in the competition, don't they? I mean, they've gone three games, they've scored 160 points, almost half of those they scored in one game against Hemel, and I know Hemel are struggling.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, I mean, obviously everyone's just expecting Toronto to walk it, but it'd be interesting to see what happens if Barrow can ruffle some feathers and maybe take some points off Toronto. There's two promotion spots available, so Barrow know that even if Toronto wipe the floor with everyone, they've still got a chance. And as we saw last season, Toulouse wiped the floor with everyone, and then Rochdale chirped up at the end and surprised them a little bit.
So Toronto, they were in a heck of a game over at Keithley. Keithley actually led 9-8 at half-time, and were full value, I thought, for that. They got an early try in the second half, which stretched their advantage, and then we saw just the power, I suppose, and pace that Toronto
fitness
has, and
well,
the fitness to come through. I think they scored three tries in the last 10 minutes. I caught up with boss Paul Rowley, and this is the reaction that he gave to me. Well, Toronto Wolfpack coach Paul Rowley, great result today at Cougar Park.
Yeah, good result. Not a good performance, but a good result. So we're happy to come away with the points, that's for sure. But it's half frustrating games at times. Frustrated by our own performance, frustrated by some horrendous decisions we had put up with as well.
There was lots of holding down, and that doesn't help your game at all.
It doesn't help anybody's game, no matter how you're playing. So you just ask for a fair crack of the whip, especially when it's on the telly. We want to showcase the game in a fair way. The worst decision was Dan Fleming's sin binning. It was a disgraceful decision.
It had us all baffled up at the back of the
stand.
No,
it's a disgraceful decision. And then to not punish the high tackle on QLT towards the end, like, wow, the polar extremes, and one's given, one's not, just baffles. So it's frustrating. But we'll never win a penalty game, we'll get that. But they reached new levels today, some of them.
How is QLT after that?
Yeah, he's got one eye shut, so tells you all you need to know. And I'm sure the crafty little scrum half, he got up. You know, it baffles me how you can lie down for 60 seconds and get up and continue. Maybe if you cleaned out for 20 seconds, a minute and not moving, then it's an head injury. So it tells you all you need to know as well. But what I will say is Keithley did a good job. I thought they were, you know, the Welsh coach side, they're a good team, they've got some good players. and I thought their contribution was really well. So in saying all that I'm saying, I don't want to take away from their efforts or certainly in any way be disrespectful for what they're about. You know, they're going to be a very difficult team to beat here throughout the year.
I thought we saw two contrasts really from your side there, Paul, because it had to be gritty in that first half and then we saw the silky skills come to the fore in the second.
Yeah, I thought we turned up here. Obviously it's been raining non-stop. You know, Noah were building his arc at one point during the week and one game was called off, so we expected a mud bath. It's been then we've had 2 days of sunshine, and it's you know, obviously we turned up to something completely different, and I think that changed our mindset. And you know, we went from being mentally prepared for a battle to, you know, maybe start playing soft, and our completion rate was, you know, I'll use that word again, horrendous, but we're on like 35% I think first half. So you know, we're on 35% and we've still got decent energy, and they still look like they're getting tired. So
and only down by 1 point, because usually with those type of stats you'd be expecting to be 12, 14, yeah, 18 now, wouldn't you?
Exactly. I thought their decision to go for a drop goal was a poor one from their part. I thought they probably would have scored the way we were defending, so I'd have probably turned the screw on us if I were them. But you know, I guess it all down to their psychology. So they, you know, they went in front and believing they could win the game, rightly so. So and I think they let us off the hook. I thought they took the foot off the gas. They started making errors themselves, and obviously then it'd be unfair then to just completely give it my team. I thought they straightened up and played a lot tougher in the second half, and our wingers were very, very good, and our starting two props were very, very good.
It was almost like the worst thing Keithley could have done was to score in the very first couple of minutes, because it was like poking a stick at a wasp nest.
Yeah, and again, credit to our boys, they kept the composure. It was a freaky try from a kick-off under a, you know, blinding sun, so it wasn't an earned try, and it wasn't one we were going to be concerned about. It was never going to be the defining moment. So, you know, they kept the composure, so fair play to our boys.
I know you've already mentioned him, but Johnny Pownall, hat-trick, and three extremes in the try-scoring as well, because he beat his winger on the outside, supported Craig all lovely, and then we saw almost trademark Johnny, 80-metre dash.
And he's been good every game, not just today. So whether it be in the mud, and defensively he's been good, and with the ball has been good, as has Liam Kerr, so we're very lucky.
How are you finding the journey?
Oh yeah, it's good, it's interesting, good group of lads, we're having fun, meeting lots of new people who are excited about the game. You know, the amount of people that have just come, you know, and just spoken to right now from Toronto, who amazed and enjoyed it, and they've said it's the first game they've been to, loved it, brilliant, and here's me like happy with the win, but can't wait to get home for my brew, because I'm disappointed with the performance, and I thought it was as grubby as a game you'll ever get. So, you know, get them, it can only get better for them. If they're excited now, then they've got you know, a lot of exciting games to come. So it's positive, and I'm enjoying it. Everybody around me is good, and that's all I'm happy about. You know, the people you meet and the memories you make, and that's what it's about.
I bet you can't wait for May the 6th when you finally get to run out in Toronto.
Yeah, it's going to be good, because if we don't win a penalty count, then I'm going to pack in. So I'm confident we'll win one. But they don't know what they're shouting for, that's the only problem. So we're going to have to educate the Toronto fans on what a penalty is and when to shout. And maybe I'll get Finney up and down, you know, telling them when to cheer. But yeah, looking forward to it, as are the lads. It's just another step along a journey that seems so surreal at times, but anyone who's in it and being around it, you can see that it's very much the real deal.
The irrepressible Paul Rowley there.
No, good piece, few gags in there. I like that, I quite enjoyed it. I was thinking, can I get that audio to run some stories off? That's what I was thinking.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'll make sure that you get it, mate, not a problem. Listen, James, it's been a delight having you in the studio. I know I've given you the big up, but you know, I couldn't run this show without your help at times, and also thanks for all the hosting that you do.
No, thanks very much.
Radio General is a registered charity and is run by a dedicated group of volunteers. Each member provides a regular commitment to the station for no monetary reward. If you'd like to help Radio General and think you could demonstrate the commitment needed, then write to us for an application form. Our address is Radio General, Warrington Hospital, Lovely Lane, Warrington, WA5 1QG. Or check out the website for more details at www.radiogeneral.co.uk.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.